You know, it was just a year ago that Casey Young graduated from the University of Hawaii John A. Burns School of Medicine in Kaka'ako. He's now doing his residency at Columbia in New York City. His interest is neurology, and this first year he's been immersed in internal medicine. It's been quite the learning experience during this pandemic, and the year is just about half over, though. He shares what it was like getting sick with COVID-19 while working on the front lines.
I thought that I had these chills, and then I didn't, and I thought I was okay for a little bit, and then I felt kind of weird. But then I had only a day of fevers, where I had a high fever up to like 103, and had these terrible myalgias. All my muscles and my body ached, extreme fatigue. I felt like I couldn't do anything. And the fevers only lasted for a day. Then I had these chills that would come and go every few hours, that would come in waves. That lasted for almost 2 weeks. I actually tested the nasal swab, the PCR swab, and that was negative around like day 10 or so. And then I got the COVID antibody testing about a month after the infection had resolved, and it was positive. So in retrospect, I had COVID.
So you were worried because you have a family with young children.
I do, yeah. I have a wife and a little 4-year-old daughter, and my wife's pregnant too, so she's in her third trimester, so I'm expecting a second kid coming up.
So that must have been kind of stressful for you. I mean, not only just working in that environment, but then just thinking that you might bring something home.
It's frightening, and I know like some of my other colleagues were trying to make home arrangements that also had children. So I wasn't able to do that. All I could do was just disinfect myself and rid myself of all my clothes and shower as soon as I got home. But yeah, it was always at the forefront of my mind whether I'd pass that to my family.
So what was it like there being in the hospital and treating those patients, you know, as this curve just started to build?
It was frightening. It was a nightmare. When it first hit, there were patients on the floor all around us, all maxed out on non-rebreather, 15 liters, about to get intubated, and nobody knew how to stop the course of this illness, and so people were getting intubated left and right. Yeah, it really felt like a war zone.
Did you ever feel overwhelmed at any point?
Many of my colleagues did reach a point where we felt that we weren't sure what else we could do. So yeah, there was a time.
This was your first year of residency. And you normally work long hours, right?
Naturally, work long hours as an intern. With the COVID pandemic, we were really stretched thin. Fortunately, we had, for New York City, a lot of workers come from out of state. They were sent over from California, from Georgia, from many other parts of the U.S. actually to help out, and that really relieved us tremendously.
So they were able to spell you?
Because a lot of our medicine beds, practically all of our medicine beds that were normal floor beds at a time were converted all to ICUs to support, you know, the peak of the disease when everybody was getting intubated.
What was the hardest thing for you to deal with, you think?
I'd say my personal fear of both giving it to my family as well as being, before I'd had the illness and had passed it, I was afraid that I was an asymptomatic carrier and I was spreading it to all these patients that didn't have confirmed COVID. And so that was also really weighed on my conscience to wondering whether I was part of the problem.
So it's all that uncertainty.
Yeah.
We've managed to flatten the curve. Any thoughts just kind of reflecting back on the patients that you were working with at the time?
Yeah. So at this point, most of the patients in Columbia are actually dealing with the complications of COVID rather than the active viral illness itself. And there's one patient experience in particular that struck me a couple weeks ago. It reassured me that we're truly making a difference. I was caring for this 50-year-old man who was hospitalized for over 2 months with COVID. And I mean, even though he'd cleared his initial viral illness, meaning that his repeat swabs had become negative, he's still very sick from all the complications of the disease. So he had recurrent ventilator-associated pneumonias, he had a pneumothorax from a high pressure that we had to give to maintain his oxygenation. He had a DVT from being unable to move in the bed. And COVID has a lot of hypercoagulability associated with it. He'd also had kidney failure, had temporarily required dialysis. Like, the list goes on and on with the complications. He had this bad critical illness, myopathy, polyneuropathy, which is a disease that you get after being bedridden for months with high doses of sedatives and paralytics, and your muscles and your nerves deteriorate. And then on top of all that, he had this persistent altered mental status, and he hadn't shown any meaningful responses to the outside world since the time he'd first been intubated. So I'd consulted neurology for this persistent altered mental status, trying to determine his prognosis, because at that point he wasn't even responding to painful stimuli. But then, almost magically, over the course of 24 hours, he went from being almost completely non-responsive to being fully alert. He's following commands, able to understand conversation. He's even able to mouth words. And I remember looking into his eyes and just knowing that he understood me. He couldn't do physically anything more than just lift his head, wiggle his fingers and toes, but he was awake. And so I reoriented him, told him he's at Columbia, told him the month and the year that he'd gotten the coronavirus, told him that he'd just woken up after 2 months of being critically ill. And then later that day, I actually FaceTimed his family, and they were just ecstatic. They're hollering and clapping. Both of his sons were just so stoked to see their father, like, finally awake and interactive. And the patient actually started crying himself. He had these streams of tears, both of happiness and anguish. Yeah, that was... it was very moving. After the family reunion, I hung up the phone, and the patient looked me straight in the eyes, and he mouthed the words, "Thank you." So I'll never forget that moment.
Your hospital also saw a number of COVID patients that had complications with their kidneys, right, and required dialysis.
That's right, yeah. So just like that patient that I had described, there was a study that was just recently published, that described the first 1,000 patients that were hospitalized at Columbia from the coronavirus. And I believe like 77 or 78% of them had kidney injury, and around 35% of them ended up needing dialysis from that. So that's extremely high, yeah.
Did you have a situation where you ran out of dialysis machines or protective gear, anything like that, ventilators?
We were stretched very thin at Columbia at a point, and then now we've since built up a good supply again, where if we were to have another second wave, that we should be able to manage. But I have worked at other hospitals too in New York during this residency, and some hospitals more than others are really struggling. I was working at another hospital in the Bronx where I was using the same N95 for almost 2 weeks.
And did you have to, like, sterilize your mask every day?
Well, I'd wear another surgical mask on top of that N95. And I had a face shield on top of all that. So I try to, I do the fit test every day, and I think it worked. I don't know if there's any amount of preparation that could have prepared us for this COVID pandemic, but at least coming from JAPSM, where family is so important, and being able to bridge that gap in the patients and the families, even though they're physically separated in the hospital, with the COVID policies, and we can't let people in for transmission, just being that provider that can help to reconnect the patient with their families. And when the patient can't speak or communicate themselves, being the one that will advocate for the patient and let the family know, provide that hope and realism for how they're doing.
Well, you mentioned that some of your colleagues, some of your doctors also got sick.
There are quite a few of my colleagues that got sick, physically sick, and also sick psychiatrically. And we were discussing actually one of the most prominent ER doctors, Dr. Lorna Breen, who's a ER doctor at the Allen, that eventually died from suicide because of all this COVID. Yeah, there's quite a few people lost in the battle.
Wow, so it took its toll in so many ways.
Yeah.
Well, anything else that you just want to share just about this whole experience?
I just want the public to know that we're still fighting hard to help these patients to regain some semblance of who they were before, who they are, and we're still fighting for them to keep their identity and help to reconnect with them. I'm a neurology prelim right now. So neurology residency is 4 years, and the first year is just internal medicine, where you get a broad basis in medicine first before you specialize.
You've not changed your mind just even based on what you've seen out in the field?
Actually, I guess that from that patient experience that I described earlier, if anything, that many things that I see help to confirm that I still want to do neurology. For that patient that I described, his neurologic prognosis and his recovery were really the most meaningful things in being able to predict whether a patient will actually be able to wake up, be able to have their previous life again, or be able to move forward. You know, this is all, I'd say, at the utmost importance and has confirmed my past even more so.
That was a conversation that we had with Casey Young, a recent JABSM graduate and now a first-year intern at Columbia University. He has been working at different New York hospitals as they battle COVID-19.